The first commandment includes the prohibition of the worship of strange gods. You shall have no strange gods before me, the Lord commands. What are some of the ways in which the first commandment can be broken by having strange gods before him? These would include superstition, which is a perverse excess of religion. Superstition is the deviation of religious feeling and of the practices this feeling imposes. It can affect worship of the Lord when one attributes an importance in some way magical to certain practices otherwise lawful or necessary. To attribute the efficacy of prayers or of sacramental signs to their mere external performance, apart from the interior dispositions that they demand, is to fall into superstition. Our Lord echoes all the prophets in warning against exterior religious practice that is devoid of a connection with an interior sentiment. But rather the Lord, in keeping with the prophetic tradition, says that what we do on the outside, what we do to express our faith, should always be rooted in our heart. It should be giving voice to what is in our heart, not replacing it. Another way of breaking the first commandment, besides superstition, is through idolatry, the worship of idols. And idols could be things that are made by human hands, or they could be something else indeed. Polytheism is forbidden by the first commandment. Polytheism in the Old Testament is called idol worship. Idolatry also means divinizing what is not God. This is a constant temptation to place above God other matters, things like power, prestige, influence, material possessions. These are ways of putting other things, created things, higher than God in our lives. Idolatry is also placing above God power, pleasure, race, ancestors, the state, money. Many early martyrs died for failing even to simulate the worship of idols. For human life finds its meaning and its purpose in the worship of the one true God. The first commandment also forbids divination and magic. Not the so-called magic shows that are really the work of illusionists, and everyone knows that the magician at the circus doesn't really cut the lady in half. The magician at the circus really doesn't cause someone to levitate, that it's all done through smoke and mirrors, as it were. The first commandment prohibits divination and magic in the sense of trusting that we can control nature, we can control the created order through incantations or through spells or things of that order. Divination is to be rejected in all forms. Satanism, conjuring the dead, horoscopes, astrology, consulting mediums, all of these conceal a desire for power over time, history, and in the last analysis, other human beings, as well as a wish to conciliate hidden powers. They contradict the honor, respect, and loving fear that we owe to God alone. Magic and sorcery, even if it would have as its intention to help another person, even if it might be attempted out of charity, this is just not to be done. This is forbidden by the first commandment, by the scriptures, and by the constant teaching of the church. Spiritism involves divination or magical practices and is contrary to the first commandment. The first commandment also forbids irreligion, a phenomenon that is quite common in our day and age, in our particular culture. Irreligion tempts God. It wounds the respect and trust we owe to our Creator and Lord. It always harbors doubt about His love, His providence, and His power. we would include under this sacrilege to make sport of the holy name of God, to make sport of religious practices, and simony. This comes up in the Acts of the Apostles, that the good of the sacraments was being sold for money. And simony is always one of those practices that is condemned in the scriptures and by the teaching of the church. Atheism is one of the most serious problems of our time. And atheism is certainly a violation of the first commandment. Atheism includes practical materialism, in which one sees value only in that which can be measured in time and space. It includes atheistic humanism, in which man is an end to himself and the sole maker with supreme control of his own history, and the economic and social liberation of man, certain forms of this that hold that religion deceives man and keeps him from working for a better life on earth. We hearken back to the words of Karl Marx, who said that religion is the opiate of the people, that religion is that which is keeping the human person down. This is, of course, a manifestation of atheism. And the works of Marx continue to be expressed in the atheism of our day. Atheism is a sin against religion for which believers share some responsibility. Believers can have more than a little to do with the rise of atheism. To the extent that they are careless about their instruction in the faith, or present its teaching falsely, or even fail in their religious, moral, or social life, they must be said to conceal rather than to reveal the true nature of God and of religion. And finally, the Catechism speaks about a false conception of human autonomy being the basis of atheism, which rejects dependence upon God. To acknowledge God is in no way to oppose the dignity of man, since such dignity is grounded and brought to perfection in God, for the Church knows full well that her message is in harmony with the most secret desires of the human heart. Closely related to atheism is agnosticism. If atheism is the denial that God exists, agnosticism is the doubt about the existence of God. The agnostic would say, "I'm not sure." The agnostic would say, "It hasn't been proven to me yet that God exists." And while there are some seekers of the truth who seek diligently and just haven't found the right answer, who would profess agnosticism, we must admit that sometimes agnosticism is at a practical equivalence with atheism. Should the agnostic abandon the search? Should the agnostic not be seeking truth, but should the agnostic simply dismiss any argument for the existence of God? That is simply a form of practical atheism. To conclude the teaching of the first commandment, we must ask the question about idols, and why is it that some would criticize the Catholic Church for being idolatrous because of the importance that we place in our churches of statues and icons and other images of our Lord and of the saints? Isn't this just a violation of the commandment, you shall not make graven images of me? This presented a problem in the early church. There were some early Christians who said that we should have no images at all, no representations of the human form of the saints, nor any representation at all of God. They were known as the iconoclasts. Icon, meaning image, iconoclasts, those who would destroy or rid the church of images. How was this difficulty solved? The Council of Nicaea in 787 taught that by becoming incarnate, the Son of God introduced a new economy of images. It justified the veneration of icons of Christ, Mary, the angels, and the saints. The honor rendered to an image passes to its prototype and is not contrary to the first commandment. Veneration, not adoration, is due to images. The movement in prayer toward the image does not terminate in it as an image, but tends toward that whose image it is. Since the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, since the Word of flesh, the eternal God, became flesh and had an appearance visible to the eye, so is the prohibition against graven images supplanted, especially when those images are of Christ and His Blessed Mother, the angels, and the saints.